Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of Wannabe Games, and I make and design tabletop role-playing games. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. I'm Craig Campbell, and I am a technical difficulty, but I am also the owner of Nerdburger Games, and I also make role-playing games. And as it stands right now, slowly working my way toward making a card game. I have actual proof copies, like digitally printed demo, proofing copies. Anyway, it's exciting.
Yay.
Boy, oh boy, does it take a long time to go through every card.
I bet.
And make notes. And our guest is here, Sebastian. Hello, welcome back.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Sebastian, even though you are a longtime repeat guest, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, delighted. I'm Sebastian Yue. My pronouns are they, them. I'm a writer, game designer, and editor, and you can see my writing and game design in Pathfinder, Lost Omens, Divine Mysteries, and Apocalypse Keys, Doomsday Delights. And you can find my editing work in Daggerheart and the Cosme RPG. I also work full-time at Canadian RPG publisher Hitpoint Press as publishing coordinator and community manager. It's great to be back.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. And we are very excited to talk about this topic, because you just said that you have a very recent interest in it. Craig, what are we talking about?
Planning the ending of a campaign. We can kind of look at this from GMing perspectives and from how you kind of address that idea as a designer, and whether you address that idea. For certain games, it's perhaps more useful to address that than for others, but it's certainly something that as a designer you can speak to a bit. But it's certainly something that comes up as GMing, because if you're running a campaign of any length, it could be a short campaign, it could be a very, very, very long campaign, that ending is kind of important. Like, you want to go out the right way. You want to have it end nicely for everyone. And Sebastian, why don't you tell us what's been going on in your gaming life that led you to this topic for us?
Yes, this is very pertinent because I had a long-running D&D campaign that ended last night. And when I say long-running, it's been going for 7 years. And,
yikes!
Yeah. And we had 141 sessions, so it was really important to me that this end well. It's had its ups and downs, and it's had various different GMs, but I got to be the one who was planning the ending, and I am really happy with how it went. And I know that an aspect of this topic is discussing the ending and kind of doing a level of pre-planning with the players. So it was really important to me that I understand what everyone's kind of desires were for the ending and made sure that everyone was satisfied with how their character ended up, like, narratively. And I also wanted to get a good sense of where that place was, so then I could prepare some surprises for my players, because I've found that they don't necessarily like knowing everything going in, and so if I have a good sense of what they want, then I can kind of control the manner and how that happens.
Tell us about that process. How did you know from the very beginning of this 7-year campaign that your players were going to have a lot of input in the ending?
No, I did not. And also, all of us are playing new characters from when we started the campaign. There's we've just had various different story arcs, but as a GM, I'm used to preparing in terms of character arcs, and so people will give me backstories and I'll plan things around that, and then we'll have an arc that is mostly focused on that storyline. But of course, everyone has stuff to do. But I found that in my experience, the closer you get to an ending, the less you have to plan. A lot of it is me doing the setup, and then the players will kind of guide how the ending goes. But when it comes to ending an entire campaign, I wanted that to be a bit more influenced by what the players wanted. And so it's also a case of kind of balancing different desires. I did have to plan a boss fight and do stat blocks and that kind of thing. And one of the players is likes to play, a murder hobo, more chaotic leaning character. And so she had a kind of separate mission, because she made a deal with an evil god, and we had to her god wanted us to kill the god that we were trying to save. And I had to be okay, so where do you envisage your character going with this, because it's important to the rest of the party that this NPC stay alive, but we'll see. And she was like, well, actually, I think it would be kind of funny if I, you know, if I like double cross the god of trickery, because I think that she has to be prepared for some of her followers to just be terrible, unreliable people. And I was like, okay, well, that means that everyone is happy. You can get your character moment and everyone can like succeed on the boss fight. And then, you know, we can all kind of walk away into the sunset and we're good. So that works. And another aspect of it was that I wanted to include where, like, the rest of the NPCs that the party had helped along the way, like, to see where they ended up. And so I wrote a bunch of, like, letters for the characters to have received, like, sometime after the campaign ends. I don't know if either of you have played Baldur's Gate 3, but you can do that. Yeah. And, yeah, like, there's a chest of grateful words that you can get. And so I was inspired by that, because you can read the letters and see where the NPCs ended up and feel satisfied that, like, oh, this is what happened with them. So, yeah, I wanted it. It was important to me that, like, the world felt lived in and they had a sense of events, like, after the campaign ended. And there were also a couple of characters who were doing a romance. And I was like, all right, well, I want to find out what happens at these characters' weddings, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to do some epilogue stuff. And it was really important that I was going in with an understanding of what all of the players wanted in that sense.
I think that denouement is so important. That epilogue, like you called it, is so incredibly important for me as a GM. Like you said, I want to know what happens too. I don't get to also continue this story because part of the story is that we're making it together, and it's not the same if it's just me headcanoning whatever I decide.
Yeah.
At the end of my games, I always make sure that my players have some control over the ending by, we go around the table and I have them tell me, okay, what happens? What happens next? Not necessarily just for themselves, but like, okay, what happens next? And you can pick, like, what happens to the villain? What happens to this person? What happens? Like, you can tell me one thing that goes on. And I've never had a problem with somebody kind of going off the rails with that, even in one shots where I don't know the players. And then you'll also find that players will build on each other's stories. They're like, oh yeah, you definitely did some genetic splicing on these lizards to make them real moon lizards. And I started a petting zoo, like, based off, like, it would do all sorts of really fun things, and it's much more satisfying to me than, okay, game's over, how'd you like it? That's just not how I like to play.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really important to give the players, like, that level of agency and input into their characters and also into the rest of the world, as you were saying. Yeah, so I did do a little kind of go around to be like, oh, tell us what happens to your character, and then like the rest of the players could also ask questions to each other about it, like about the aspects of that they found most interesting. I had questions of my own. Like, it was just really nice, and I'm really happy with how it went.
I find it it just tickles me that the idea of the god of madness, or not the god of trickery, having to be prepared for, like, followers to lie to them and trick them and try to mess with them, which actually, like, makes perfect sense. Like, why wouldn't you? But I couldn't stop thinking about that for a minute.
yeah, it was funny.
An astute funny moment from your player.
Yeah.
yeah, like the ending. I mean, I've ended a number of campaigns over the years, and some to great effect, and some, you know, ended very, very well, and some not so much. I'm going to tell the tale of the ending of a campaign that could have been better. And what I think I probably could have done to make it better was, it was an Eberron campaign back in third edition D&D, and the characters were, there was an overarching story that kind of popped up every so often of creatures from Zoriat. If you know the setting, that's like the realm of madness, with all sorts of weird and wacky creatures living there. And so these things keep popping up. And in the end, the group had to kind of take on and seal this rift that was threatening to open in their the city of Starlosker, in Eberron. And they were successful and they did all of this, but in my head I was like, well, this is a rift, and it wasn't a terribly high level campaign, so it was kind of a mid-level campaign when it ended. So I was like, in my head I was like, well, there should be significant risk of this rift being a problem in outside of just like letting more of these monsters in. And so I decided, like, they succeeded, but in the process of closing the rift, they had to be near it to do the ritual or whatever it was that I had at the time. It was a long time ago. I think it was a ritual. And in the process, they closed it, but they got sucked through the rift to this realm. And they had only ever heard terrible things about it. And it was like the stuff of nightmares to them. And they were, you know, it was bad news. In my head, my thought was like, well, this is a setup to maybe somewhere down the road, like after a campaign or two, or after we play something else, we'll come back and we'll do a little short mini campaign of these characters getting home. And then we'll have an epilogue, a coda, to kind of let them return to these characters and maybe even advance them in level because they had to fight their way out and blah, blah, blah. But what I ultimately did was kind of rob them of the celebration in the city. Mm. Like they saved the city and they saved ostensibly Eberron, but I took that, like, they knew that they succeeded and that was good. And they were able to kind of enjoy that, but I didn't give them kind of the ending moments of like talking to the NPCs and having, you know, like the trumpets blare and the music plays and the
beginning,
you know, everybody,
the hero.
Everybody huzzas. And I didn't give them that, which was a misstep on my part in retrospect. And they didn't, the players didn't tell me that in so many words, but there was a sense, there was definitely in the moment, there was like a sense of, that should have like been done differently. And I could have, if I had thought to do it, been like, and rewind, like, this was a dream and you found, like, you know, now you're actually back in the city. And this was just like, these were the two divergent paths you could have gone on. And the realm made you see this one to try to mess with you. And I didn't. And, you know, I just, yeah. You know, they were friends of mine and we all got over it and moved on from it. But it was one of those things that I kind of, as a GM, I got it in my head that this is kind of a cool thing to do. This is a good way to end things. And I thought I knew my players well enough to know that they would find that interesting and engaging. And it would have probably been better for me to think a little more on that or to, as Sebastian did, and as I have done more times since then, is actually talk to them about those sorts of things.
Right.
I could have given them the huzzah, you know, and everything, and then had the literal last moment been, and now you get sucked into the wacky realm and you're trapped there, and we'll come back and play these characters again in a couple years. Or I could
wacky
have
realm.
So, well,
the Looney Tunes realm, the wacky realm.
Yeah, it's not that, but you know. I could have handled it in so many different ways, and the way I did was like not the optimal, but we all live and learn.
Those like experiences are important because it like trial and error is how so many of us learn how to do things. And you can either have trial and error by playing in a lot of games, but not every GM has that luxury of being able to play in a lot of games. Especially if you're more of a casual player, if you're a GM, you might be the only person who's GMing. And plus you have to, like, you know, GMing is different than playing and experiencing the stories. You have to kind of figure out what things work. So I think good practice would be doing a lot of one shots where you have to end a game every single time you play. And just kind of, you're basically spam running your endings at that point. And practicing once you want to do. You don't really want that kind of experience at the end of a really long campaign, because I don't know, a bad ending can sour the whole story. I'm thinking of several TV shows and movies. Bad ending can sour the whole story, unfortunately.
Yeah, agreed. Game of Thrones.
Oh, I don't want to talk about that.
Dexter.
yeah, definitely. And honestly, like planning for the campaign that I had was a kind of unique situation where I had previously been a player. I had a stint as a GM, and because it was my friend who actually started the campaign, and we had to take a bit of a hiatus during the worst of the pandemic, like when it started around 2020. And I had a character, and I like there was a period of time when he became an NPC, and like I just took the campaign, like I did the campaign kind of epilogue, but she'd been GMing like immediately prior to that, so I did get kind of both perspectives on it.
So You said that you had listened to, because I want to come back to that campaign that you were talking about. You said that you had listened to your players to help you like figure out what the ending was, and you didn't really have to do a lot of planning by that. How long do you think the process took for you to start planning the ending of this really long campaign?
Oh, honestly, I'd been thinking about the ending for a while, in the sense that I was working to like these two characters who were romancing each other, like they had a set end point, and so that also meant that they both had to be alive at the time of the end. It didn't mean that they couldn't die immediately before that and come back. That did actually happen in the boss fight, but they just had to be alive at the end point of the campaign. And as for the other two players, like their characters, like I did actually have to ask, like, you know, what is your plan for this god? Because, you know, it's your turn in combat next, and I need to know where you're going with this, so then we can kind of discuss it, because I would like for everybody to get the ending that they want. So, sorry, I forgot your original question was. It was
how long ago?
Honestly, yeah, I've been thinking about it for a while, but in terms of actually sitting down and planning it, probably like a couple of weeks. It took me a bit to write the letters and to also figure out what questions I was going to ask during the epilogue, but I didn't really have any like set scenes, other than I just wanted to share these materials with them. And like, you know, we went around and like we read them out, and I asked a few questions about where their characters ended up. But I'd been it's been in my brain for like ages and ages, like, you know, like at least a year. But in terms of actually sitting down and planning things, like a couple of weeks, really.
Like that's so hard to do when you're also giving your players a lot of agency. Like you do have to kind of plan a good ending. I don't disagree that at all.
I wanted them to have materials to discuss. And so like if I had to have like these things written out, I had to have that ready for the end of the session. And like, you know, because I uploaded them into Roll20 and everything, so I had to I had to make sure that like the stuff that I'd written was consistent with the endings that the players had told me for their characters as well. So there was that aspect of it too.
What would you have done if one of those players, one of those characters that were in the couple, what would you have done if they had perished before the ending?
Oh, we had the players went in very, very prepared. We had like four contingency plans. Like there were like four different ways that they could have been revivified. Like that just would not have happened. Like, yeah. And also we also have safety tools. And so like if that had happened, we could have just been like, okay, let's do a little retcon if I needed to. But like in the actual fiction of the game, like they were so prepared, that wouldn't happen.
Now I just watched like two nights ago when I was home sick. I watched the D&D movie for the first time, the Chris Pine one. Okay. They telegraph that ending. It's like the halfway, like the midpoint. I don't want to say what the ending is. Maybe if people haven't seen it. I really like in a movie when there are hints about what could happen at the end. I don't like when there's hints about what could happen at the end and it completely spoils the ending for me in the middle of the movie. I wonder what kind of balance, like, I feel like it might actually be easier than a filmmaker. It might be easier as a game runner to sprinkle in the bits to say like, here's the breadcrumb trail I want you to follow to get to this ending that I have planned, without completely ruining it. I'm using your campaign as my little springboard for all of this. Did you hint to these other players about this ending, about like the, for example, the god of trickery being tricked and double crossed? Did you do any foreshadowing?
No, that was entirely the player's idea. I just had to check in with her to be like, hey, so your character, you know, you're lying, backstabbing, like murder hobo character, what would she do in this instance? And you know, like the player's actually been very considerate of like the makeup of the rest of the party, and you know, like my players are very good at communicating with each other about what they want and about what their characters want. So I wasn't actually able to foreshadow that particular event, but I did. It's a thing that I planned with the player individually, and I think it was funny the way that it ended up.
Hmm. Craig, have you ever foreshadowed an ending? I feel like foreshadowing, it like, kind of gives the players a little agency too, because you can get a little feedback from them seeing how they deal with those things.
I've done it sort of here and there. Usually it's not foreshadowing something major about the ending. It's usually like certain like smaller aspects of it that'll just be kind of like nice little Easter eggs of like, oh, yeah, like this, you said this thing and now this thing happened. I am a glutton for punishment in that I love to use vague prophecies in games. And I had a campaign years and years ago, D&D campaign, that was the very first episode was, you know, a session was a carnival in the small town where they all grew up, and they all got their fortunes told. They all had, you know, so they all had like this prophecy, and it was, there was a variety of things that happened, but I kept everything incredibly vague. It was like, they could be interpreted in a lot of different ways. And then slowly as the campaign went along, I had something pop up that was like, oh, that's hearkening back to that particular prophecy. And I sat on one until the very last episode. I always call them episodes because I think in terms of television. in the last session, there was a barbarian, like a half-orc barbarian, who in his prophecy was cradling a child, was like holding a child and comforting a child, which is way out of character for the character as presented in the history. But in the very, very last session, the barbarian had an opportunity to save a child in that moment. And it was one of the other players, like the guy playing the barbarian didn't even make the connection. One of the other players was like, holy crap. That's from the first session. Because they had, at that point, we had gone through most of them, had their prophecies, like something played out. So, and they had just forgotten his, like everybody just, it wasn't in their mind anymore. I have done the foreshadowing. I did a campaign, or it was a short campaign where that involved time travel. And so I had them all.
Yes.
I had this setup again. It wasn't specifically a prophecy. It wasn't like a fortune teller or something like that, but it was, they got a glimpse of the future and they saw themselves failing horrendously, at this fight. And then when they got to the end of the campaign, I overpowered them. And like, I figured if they won, if everything went smoothly, then that was just like, oh, that was just to make them worry. So it was just like setting, you know, like giving them an impetus to like do things and be really careful and make sure that that doesn't come true. And if they did get overpowered, because I really did kind of pile on for that last fight, then there was this time travel element and there was an artifact and everything. And so they got a chance to repeat it. And I had like, they had, so now they did the thing where like certain events in that fight were going to happen. Like, you know, somebody was going to cast this spell and somebody was going to run over here and do this thing. And they knew that those things were coming and they assumed that they were going to happen in the same order. And some of them did, and some of them didn't. And I shook it up a little bit, but they knew enough about what was coming that they could make sure, okay, we make sure we're spread out so we don't all get slammed by this big spell, and we make sure we do this or that, you know? And so that was fun. I think the players really enjoyed that particular scenario because it raised the stakes. They had no way of knowing if there would be a third time. Like, there was no guarantee that I would let it happen a third time. I'm not even sure in the moment, and in looking back on it, I don't know if I would have let it happen a third time. It's like I gave you all the clues, I gave you all the stuff that's gonna happen, and you didn't.
Mr. Policeman,
you know, maybe things went poorly. Sometimes things end badly, you have down endings. But they did. They made all the changes that they needed to make. They still got surprised by a few things because like, some things happened out of order, and there was a couple of things that they didn't see happen in the first time through the fight. But that was an interesting experiment. I don't know that I would do that very often, and I would never do it a second time with the same group.
Yeah, I think like it's so Sebastian, you had hinted at this too when you said, like, you want the players to be able to, like, know about the ending, at least prepare themselves for it, have something satisfying without completely ruining every single surprise. It's a delicate little fine line to walk on. I have had success once. I haven't tried this multiple times of asking the players individually, do you want a happy ending, a sad end? Like, what kind of ending do you want flavor-wise? And then no one else really knows what the other people chose. So I just don't know if that's the most effective way to go about doing that. I think the best thing to do is just, like, knowing, like, paying attention to what your players are going for, paying attention to the kind of stories that they're enjoying, and taking their lead on it. Just a hard way to balance. A hard thing to balance.
Yeah, I think so.
It probably serves well if you're doing this with people that you know fairly well.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of trust built so that if you do misstep as the GM, the player's going to kind of let it, you know, be like, okay, I see what you tried to do. It didn't quite work. I'm not mad at you or anything. It's not something that I would necessarily do with, like, a brand new group in a short, you know, like a mini campaign. Like, if you get together at the local game store or whatever, and you're going to play like a 4-session mini campaign with people you don't really know, that could be a little rough to kind of take those types of steps. But with people that you really know.
Well, you can, and go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, in my case, like, we've been playing together for 7 years, so I had a lot of opportunity to observe what they were doing and to learn what kinds of stories they wanted to tell. And by the time we got to the end, it was more of a confirmation on my part, but it was just like, there was just that one player that I had to be like, okay, I actually do need to know your intentions going into this, because your character could really do anything. And I'm aware, and I know this fact about your character. So we have to talk about that. But yeah, it is really nice to do it if you've been able to play together for a long time, or if you have that kind of trust.
I think with a one shot where you don't have that trust, especially like you're playing a convention game or something like that, with a bunch of strangers, how do you get them to still feel like they are, number one, making sure that your one session remains one session, because you have to wrap it up within your 4-hour convention time slot, right? Making sure you get all that done, you kind of wrap it up for everybody in a decently satisfying way, as satisfying as you can get for a one shot. While still making it feel like they had something to do with the ending. I was thinking about the things I've done recently, at least, like, if my players do something funny or they mention something weird at the beginning of a session, I write it down, I put it in my pocket, and I swing it back at the end. Like, oh, they pulled a mean prank on this one PC. He's going to come back. He's going to be with the motorcycle gang at the end. He's going to be the one with the lead pipe. He's going to be there. Or you mentioned that you left your dog with your little old neighbor, and that's why you were able to come here. Like, you can bring those things back. Like, just, like, listen for those little hints. And sometimes that can be a fun little surprise for them at the end. Like, oh, I made this happen with my storytelling, with my role-playing, with my character building. It's simple. It's like a little tiny thing you can do. And it's not like, it doesn't, like, completely, you still have to plan an ending. But at least it makes it feel like they were sort of involved.
Definitely.
So a little tiny trick.
Yeah. And on the topic of kind of following, like, player interests, like, a safety tool that my table uses is Stars and Wishes, and so at the end of each session they would tell me, like, oh, this is what I liked and this is what I want to happen in the next session. And so sometimes the wishes are, oh, I need to speak to this particular NPC, or oh, I actually have to speak to this character about this other thing, I definitely want to get into this fight. Like, you know, they'll tell me what they're looking forward to, and so that tells me as the GM that, like, actually, okay, I need to make sure that this thing happens because this is on this player's wish list to get done in the next session. So it's a thing you can do between sessions as well, and it's not like an exclusive thing to the ending.
Well, what can we do to make it easier as game designers to facilitate this sort of ending building for our players who are picking up our games? I think, aren't there like some games that are all focused on like building an ending that everybody already knows about? Sorry, my brain's not functioning 100% since I've been sick, but I feel like that was maybe I'll do a little quick research before this just popped into my head. My question, how do we do this as GMs? How can we facilitate, or game designers, how can we facilitate this for our GMs and our players?
Well, I think, you know, the base level of it is to just encourage within the game book text what we've been talking about in talking to your players. If you're encouraging the reader that, you know, people should be talking and kind of figuring out what sort of game experience they want to have together, that implies, you know, at all levels, that implies like when you work out your character relationships at the beginning, make sure everybody kind of talks and figures out how everything kind of goes together and have an ongoing dialogue during the course of the campaign. As far as speaking specifically to endings, off the top of my head, I'm not thinking of a game that where the text does that. I'm sure there are some, and maybe something will pop in my head as we talk here too. But I think if you were to design a game that is built very much around, like, it's going to be a campaign, it's going to be kind of this length, it's going to have, you know, and it whatever the themes of the game are, right? You're speaking to, like, this is going to be a dark game. This is a downer game where bad things happen and characters have, you know, some terrible things, and there's going to be some sadness and you might have a little bleed walking away from the table. Speaking to what that is and, you know, cause I think the default sometimes might be with a lot of gamers is like, you know, end it all. Great. Everything happens. You know, you succeed, you win, you do the thing. But if the game is kind of, you know, a game that's more about kind of difficult things and hard choices and darkness and so forth, speaking to, like, just reinforcing the idea that, you know, to in the text talking about, like, everybody chose to play this game. This game does these things. Don't pull the punch at the end, because you might be kind of diminishing the game just the way Jess said, but kind of in the opposite direction, like giving everybody this big heartwarming moment at the end when it was a game that was kind of about darkness and difficult things, doesn't ring true for what the game is about and what the players agreed to when they played the game.
Yeah, I think a couple of different approaches come to mind when discussing this. One of them is closer to what you were saying, Craig, about kind of establishing those expectations from the beginning and throughout the game. I think that in many ways, like, ending a campaign is kind of like beginning it in the sense of, like, the facilitation felt very similar. It felt similar to doing like a session zero and figuring out like what people were looking for from it. It's just that the questions were different because I had more context to build on. So, and I know that there's a lot of focus on games and, like, you know, how to get started with playing them. And so I find that that a lot of games do a good job of onboarding players and GMs to the system, and some of them will be like, here is a good structure for session zero, here is what you should get the players to do before you actually start the story. And I think it might be an option to do a similar kind of thing, probably less involved if you already have that setup section, but you could do a similar thing for the end. And another approach that I have seen is a kind of a reverse approach, in the sense that the game has informed will inform the GM, like, this is what happens if the characters do nothing. So then you get a sense of where the story would go, and then you can focus the ending on what choices the players have decided to make. And, you know, like, high improv games do this really well. Like, I've seen it codified in Roan, Rook, and Deckard Spire, if you know that one. Yeah. But I really like how they say, this is what happens if the players do nothing. Like, this is the way the scenario will go. And, like, this is the intent of the antagonist of the story. So it's up to them to make choices that will influence that outcome.
That sort of stuff works really well for mystery games also. Like, here the bad guy will get away with it if you don't solve this mystery. They will cover up this evidence if you don't get here. They'll do this. They'll make it harder for you along the way, and planning out, like, a track for that. The Baker Street role-playing game does that in their mechanics. I could not find the game that I was thinking of. I swear that there's a game where everybody's already dead at the end, and you kind of figure out how they die. I don't remember what that game is. I'm sorry. But while I was trying to figure that out, I remembered that there is a game called World Ending Game, which is specifically about like the epilogue for your. It's like supposed to be the last session. It's a system agnostic game about the denouement, about the epilogue, where you take all the scenes and you kind of wrap it up. It's like the last couple minutes of the movie. That's by Everest Pipkin, and that won an Indie Groundbreaker Award a couple years ago. I think it won one. I don't remember if it won or if it was just nominated. So there are games apparently that facilitate that as well, specifically. But yeah, knowing where, like, you know when the endpoint is also for your game too can help players figure out, like, okay, we gotta wrap this up. Like, we know that this game ends when we reach, being like Eat the Reich. Okay, when we get to Hitler, this game is done. We know how this game is gonna end with Eat the Reich. And we're moving from there. And it can kind of help you pace yourself as a player too.
I do think that there is an interesting space to play in if you are designing a game that is specifically about the ending or about like the what happens afterwards. One that I really like is Takamo Okada's Stew Pot, if you've seen. It's published by Evil Hat. It's about like a party who retires from adventuring and starts up a fantasy tavern, and it's really really cute. I like that the idea is to kind of replace the adventuring experience that they had with kind of with town with living in town and experiences of like reintegrating into normal life. And I think that there's a lot of kind of design between the lines there about like actually being an adventurer is really traumatizing, and you can and if you decide to do normal life stuff afterwards, then that process of switching gears, so to speak, is going to be challenging.
That's really interesting. I knew of the game, but I didn't think about it of Stew Pot, and I didn't think about it in that terminology. But I've come across in the last year or two like various episodes of TV shows or even movies that speak to like what happens when a character returns from war, and how do they integrate back into life, and what their new job is, and dealing with family, and kind of living in a world where they're not having to be on guard all the time, where people are just people, and they're not, you don't classify them as, fellow soldiers or enemy combatants, in those hard terms, and that adventuring parties that are, doing things where you're probably dealing with a lot of violence. That's an interesting take. I really like that as a kind of a wrap-up story.
Yeah, I think players will, like, if they have a specific arc for how they want their character to go, the hardest thing for me as a player, if I'm playing a long-term campaign, is not knowing when this ending might be. Is it gonna be a couple sessions from now, 10 sessions from now, et cetera? Because I don't want to wrap up my arc too early. I don't want to wrap things up and then, like, oh great, I've had that emotional climax and now what? I'm gonna be sitting here and, well, I'll have to either come up with something new, which is kind of daunting, or I'm not gonna have the same motivations that my character might have otherwise. Giving, like, I want to know when those things end. And like, if I know where that is, I'm going to finish. And I'm thinking about games where, for example, Craig with sorry, my brain is not functioning. The game where we're all computers, you're all little computer programs.
Code Warriors.
Code Warriors. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. Where the computer system's being deleted out from under you. You have this thing chasing your ass, and you're gonna hurry up. And if you have some stuff you want to say, you better be saying it because this computer's about to get deleted, and you're gonna be gone forever. Games
Yeah,
like that.
In the game, there's you can choose to play it a bunch of different ways, and it's actually described as modes. And one of them is hopeless mode, which is where everything's going to get wiped out. The computer's going to crash. It's all coming to an end. There's nothing you can do about it. And so it puts a ticking clock on like how is your character going to go out, and how are you going to end this story for this character? Because there is no tomorrow in that version of the game.
Well, that's really interesting. I haven't heard of it. You said it was called Code Borders?
Code Warriors. It's mine. Code it's Warriors. One of my games.
Okay.
I'll send you a PDF because we're friends.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Yeah, it sounds interesting. Yeah. I know that for ending my game, I had a set like story point that we wanted to end at, because, you know, we'd been playing for 7 years. We're looking forward to doing something different. And this group, like, I will be playing a different game with this group. But for me, it felt good to end like once everyone had kind of gone through their respective character arcs. And I did have a player who switched to a different character like relatively later in the game. And I did have to say, like, well, this is the endpoint that I'm planning for the campaign. I actually cannot accommodate like a whole other character arc when I just have one to go, really. So she kind of went in with that understanding that, like, if, you know, that if you make another character at this point, like, I won't be able to do stuff for it. So, you know, you can change your character if you like, but you know, but this is kind of like the terms of how that's gonna go.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough thing to have to handle kind of the mid or late sessions of a game. What did you end up doing with that character?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I think, this was a thing that, so basically she is on her third character of the game, like by the time that we ended, one, because like the character that she started out with died very early in the game. And she was like, oh, okay, I'm fine with that, because she does not mind character death. She has like a billion backup characters and was like, oh, I'm always excited to do this. And she had a character who finished like her character arc and was like, actually, like this character has kind of gotten everything that she can out of adventuring with the party, and like she's going to stay in her hometown. And then we did another like I ran an arc for her third character, and then at that point I was like, hey, just so you know, if you want to bring in another character after that, I won't be able to run a character arc for it, so like it's your choice. You can, and like I will definitely, there'll still be stuff to do, but I won't be able to like run a storyline that is entirely focused around this character because of the way that the campaign is progressing. And also because like we had an in-game discussion about, do you want to be brought back, because the party has a cleric and he's like the only one in the party who has the spell to bring people back. And so he had this whole, he's also a lawyer, and it's very funny because he was like, okay, well, I want your wills, essentially. And you know, like this one character was like, I mean, well, don't resurrect me. And I was like, okay, so like as above table, like as a player, if your character isn't being resurrected and you bring in another one, then we have to talk about that too. So that was kind of how that discussion arose. But yeah, she ended up playing like the third character throughout the end of the game, and that was and I think that was a good choice. I liked playing with that character.
Now, it would be interesting to have a game where the mechanics were centered around giving that arc, like this is the arc for this character, and kind of centering around completing that for one character or maybe two at a time, with that built into the mechanics. I have not encountered a game that does that, so.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know. I don't know. I think, I mean, it's certainly possible if you want to, but this was more of a narrative thing, just because everyone had, like, you know, sent me backstories, and I'm like, okay, well, clearly this, yeah, you know, you left me a lot to play with here. So, no, I had a lot of fun doing that. I like running kind of character centric arcs, and honestly, like, it's a thing that my table really likes. They like kind of, you know, beginnings, middles, and ends, like within the campaign itself.
You know what would be, okay, here's an idea for a mechanic, and someone can steal this because I have way too many things on my plate right now. Okay, so you put down three tarot cards. They're all face down. Start with them face down. Put down three tarot cards, and you can pick the player. You can look at the first two, and the player can swap out either the first one or the second one, and that'll determine your beginning of your arc or your middle of your arc. And you as GM get to keep that third card, which determines their ending. Or maybe they can choose their ending and they don't get to know their middle. I don't know. You could do something with that. Just mechanize that narrative, like, spin to things. I'm just talking off the top of my head. like making it so you can, I'm just thinking of ways you could put something like that specifically into a mechanic. It wouldn't be anything useful, I don't think, for like a very long-term game, but for something shorter, for something a little less weighty, a little less, we're doing a lot of stuff in this game. Planning out an arc like that might work. I'm thinking about it like being connected to like a list. I don't know. I'm sure something like that already exists. Any other ideas for how we can, as designers, impact the ending of our story?
Yeah, I did. I did mention that immediately before the epilogue, like it had to run a big boss fight because, you know, it's D&D. Of course, I have to run a big boss fight before the end. I think I would like more guidance as to how to customize like boss fights. I think if your game has combat, because there's a lot of material out there, there's a lot to choose from, but I still ended up like putting together like my own stat blocks because I have access to people's character sheets. I know what abilities they have, and I wanted to create problems that were solvable, and because like this is for level 15 characters, and so there is significantly less material to pull from, so I ended up kind of like Frankenstein's monster, like with a stat block. I took stuff from a bunch of different sources, but I think that more games could stand to have guidance as to like, you know, here is how to make a good boss fight, as opposed to giving a set thing. I think that like the creation of those combats could afford to be more modular.
I totally agree with that. The thing I hate the most in big epic games like that is you get to the final boss and then they're just like any other guy, like, okay, how can I make him or how can I make them like cool, more cinematic? Yeah. I want like also like the big monologues, like, oh, I love a villain monologue. I want to incorporate a monologue. How do I do that? It's just a lot of work on the part of the GM to like manage all of that, especially like D&D. You have to figure all that out. Like you said, Frankenstein's monster, you never said you were playing D&D. I just assumed. Sorry.
No, I was playing D&D. I did actually write a monologue for the GM to deliver at that point. I was like, I have a thing in my brain. I think that it would be good. And also because like the end, like the transition to the ending needed to be very cinematic, because I didn't want to have to be like, so how do you get there? I'm just like, no, he's just gonna teleport everyone to the top of the mountain where there's a huge storm. It's gonna be really dramatic. That can happen in a kind of cutscene. And I think that's kind of the only cutscene that I've actually had in the game. We can think about it that way. Like stuff that just kind of happens.
I'm gonna go back to the D&D movie and slightly ruin the ending. There's a thing that happens. I'm not ruining it. I'll be very vague. How long has the movie been out? 2 years? Doesn't matter. There's a spell that happens at the beginning of the movie that comes into play at the end. Making your big bad evil guy use a certain spell that bests them at the beginning, and then you meet them again. They have to figure out a way to thwart it. Like that could be like, how could we incorporate that? That again, that's GM planning. I'm also thinking though, I was not super satisfied with that final fight in that movie either. Like, come on now. We could have been a little bit more epic. I love a dramatic mountaintop storm, lightning flashing cinematic ending. That's better, in my opinion, for a D&D. Yeah.
Thank you. I wanted it to feel kind of epic, and so I was like, well, it has to take place outside. Yeah, and it has to be all dramatic, and because, you know, like this campaign likewise did include time travel, and so like there was a whole thing because the god of time is also the god of chaos in this setting, so there was a lot of random tables, and I was like, okay, well, there was a lot of stuff that happened that triggered when the characters use specific moves, like when they use specific abilities, and so like a lot of the ones that were related to time and to time travel, like that would set off like a, you know, I'd roll on like a D 100 chaos table, like it was pretty fun. Yeah.
Craig, you have any final thoughts on that too?
Oh boy, just to really give thought to it, really think about it. Like we mentioned here that, you know, it can kind of sour the campaign in a way, if you don't kind of, you know, kill it. Well, that's putting a lot of pressure on people. If you don't have a nice, acceptable, fun ending that kind of is in line with what the character arcs are and takes care of like a major plot point and fits the theme of the game that you're playing and doesn't suddenly do some weird side, you know, some weird turn down a different alley. Just give it thought.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually of the impression, like of the opinion that actually, yes, you should in fact be killing it. Like that is pressure that is justified. And so like, that's something that I definitely felt when I was planning this ending. And I was like, actually it's good that you feel kind of, I mean, I think that it's a concern that you should have. Like, I do fully agree that like, if you end it in an unsatisfying way, then like that's going to linger. And, but like, if you end it in a satisfying way, then that will, you know, that also will linger because it's the end of a really long storyline. So
yeah,
actually, I mean, you know, my advice is honestly take that. If you feel that pressure, take it and let it motivate you, and you better be sure that you kill it.
Fair enough.
Oh no. Well, we're wrapping up here. I think that was a great final thought. Sebastian, thank you so much for joining us.
And yeah, thank you for having me.
Where can we learn about you and your stuff?
Yeah, you can find me on my website at sebastianua.ca. I'm Canadian and I have a Canadian domain. And you can find me at sebastianua on Blue Sky as well.
Excellent. You can find me on Blue Sky at Joska. And I have a website. Don't go there. Go to my itch page, Wannabe Games. Go to wannabegames.itch.io or DriveThruRPG. Wannabe Games on DriveThruRPG. You can find my stuff there.
You can find me at Nerdburger Craig on various social media. My website is nerdburgergames.com. And the games are all at DriveThruRPG. Although there's the fancy, nice versions of some of the hardcovers at the store on the website as well. And coming sometime soon here in the next few months will be Slay to Win, which is a card game. It's actually, I describe it as an occasionally cooperative role-playing / monster hunting card game. Because you are a party of adventurers who are going to go out and, you know, defeat the monsters and save the kingdom. And that's wonderful. But you all each individually, secretly, very, very badly want to be the greatest monster hunter who ever lived. So you have to deal the killing blows in order to win those points to become that.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Very League of Legends of you. Thank you to Steph Sachs for our opening and closing song, which is Avel, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs. And thank all of you for listening. We'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.